Welcome to New Reality. I'm Dr. Desiree Hertak, and I'm sitting in for Alan Steinfeld, who's in England this week. Alan's doing some very interesting investigations into the crop circle phenomena, which I'm sure he'll share with you next week. So please keep tuning in weekly to this show. But tonight I want to introduce New Reality special guest, Dr. J.J. Hertak. Dr. Hertak is the author of the popular book entitled The Book of Knowledge, The Keys of Enoch, and several other books such as The End of Suffering, which he co-authored with the remote viewing specialist Russell Targ. He has a Ph.D. from the University of California and a second Ph.D. from the University of Minnesota. He is the president of the Academy for Future Science, which is involved in many areas of research, from sound testing in the pyramids to archaeological investigation in Egypt to water and new energy technologies. And also for tonight's show, we're going to be talking about the extraterrestrial question. As many of you know, astronaut Edgar Mitchell, the sixth man to walk on the moon, was on Kerrang Radio July 23, 2008, just over a week ago, and made an announcement that the government is having knowledge of extraterrestrial alien intelligence. And he also affirmed that we exist in a universe teeming with life. So, Dr. Hertak, how would you comment on some of Edgar Mitchell's comments?
Well, first of all, I'm very happy to be here to reach out to the world through this program and to say, in short, astronaut Mitchell's confession is really the blueprint of the future. I think it is as important as the splitting of the atom. And in the context of the American leadership in the space program, I think it is really paramount that he, a senior scientist with a degree in science, a man of impeccable knowledge, one who founded the Noetics Institute with Wernher von Braun, and one esteemed throughout the world, should admit that we are not alone in the universe. I feel this confirms with another astronaut, a colleague and friend of mine, Gordon Cooper, said many years ago when I asked him what he saw in outer space, and he said the ETs were as thick as fleas, quote unquote. Now, I know that sounds a bit like science fiction, but we have reached a point where science fiction has caught up with reality, and reality has outstripped science fiction. So I'm very, very pleased with astronaut Mitchell's statement. I think it comes as a promising step towards disclosure and a type of new astronomy cosmology long over needed.
Now, I'd like to just take a few minutes to talk about what astronaut Mitchell exactly said. He was on Kerrang Radio, which is actually an interesting young radio station in the UK, in the West Midlands area, and he talked about it on July 23rd, as I mentioned. Now, interesting, Dr. Hertak and I are often on radio together, and we did the same radio in March 13th, 2008, so we know Nick Margersian, who's the host there. I want to say a few of the words. So first, Nick asked Ed Mitchell, do you believe in life on other planets? And Ed Mitchell said, oh, yes, this is not much of a question at all, but there is life throughout the universe. We're not alone in the universe at all. And Nick asked, you're convinced we're not alone in the universe? And Mitchell says, oh, I know for sure we're not alone in the universe. Now, have we been able to identify for sure where the other inhabited planets are? That's not, you know, he doesn't know all that information. No, we haven't, certainly not in our solar system, but they have been identified quite a number of planets now, which are likely places for life-bearing planets. And he went on to talk about the whole deal with Roswell and the fact that he himself grew up around Roswell, New Mexico. I didn't know that. So I know he was quite well aware of these interesting things. Talk about Roswell, Dr. Hertak. What do you feel happened there?
Well, in the summer months of 1947, something dramatic took place. Not one, but two alien spacecraft came down, one in Aztec and one near the so-called White Sands area. The Special Forces retrieved a very extensive documentation, and the local Roswell newspaper made an announcement that we had evidence of alien life forms and technology. This was, of course, later denied by General Ramey and other assistants to Mr. Ramey. But in short, the story has gone through many, many filters of information from the research of Stanton Friedman to Don Schmidt and others who acknowledged the fact that there was indeed a retrieval of living biological life forms. And I happen to know this clearly because one of my students was related to the family of the mayor of the Roswell area and confirmed the fact that there were live specimens. In fact, I can say this quietly, without reservation, that one of the members of our military high command was aware of the living biological entity that was retrieved. And so, after many, many years, we are now at a crossroads of acknowledging not only in Roswell, but in other parts of the world, we've had close encounters with life forms, according to the late Dr. Ellen Hynek. These would be life forms of the third kind. And according to investigations by others, in terms of the dialogue that has taken place with these biological life forms, we've had close encounters with those of the fourth kind, namely philosophical and scientific discussions that have gone forth.
So it's interesting, going back to some of the dialogue on the Kerrang radio, Mitchell talked about the fact that he feels the governments are moving towards disclosure, and he points out to the fact that I believe he mentioned the Belgium government. He also mentioned the Brazilian and, in a sense, the Mexican government and the French government. And he was, of course, talking on the UK radio station, and the United Kingdom just recently released some of their information. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
I was privileged to speak with Nicholas Pope, who was formerly with the Ministry of Defense and now a spokesperson for the Ministry of Public Information. At a major conference where he disclosed, I think, Pope, that the British government was going to release significant documentation in some six phases. This would not necessarily entail the most sensational of case studies. There would be certainly a vast plethora of documentation released. He did also mention that because the French government had come out and made some very important announcements that suggested that we were being watched by other life forms, it was important for the British government also to engage and to bring forth this information.
Right. I think that the British government has released so far about 160 documents, and Nick is currently working with their national archives, I believe, to help them get this information out. And they said it will take up to 4 years to get all this data out. I think he indicated, because I also was with him, that some of the thing that causes it to take so long is that the government actually does go through each document, because people who have their names, their addresses, and phone numbers as reporting on some of these UFO events have to have these things all removed, because you can't put that into the National Archives as public information.
Well, if I can say this, it's not simply the release of documents by the zillions of tidbits from some cosmic teletype in the universe. It's the interpretation of documents, what this means in terms of a psychological profile of the human race, where we are in the evolutionary track of the local universe. What influences, if any, do we have to contend with? We know that the Brookings Institute did a study in the early 60s suggesting that most civilizations collapse when they are visited by superior in the sense of the conquistadors visiting South American countries and showing a superior military technology, a superior sociology to make decisions. And in the absence of some type of preparation, we as Earthlings have to recognize we have common interests that must be shared not only by the French and the British government, but also by the Brazilians, the Mexicans, who also have gone into disclosure. And we in North America, having really a vested interest in space science, need to move ahead and recognize, as some of our colleagues in other parts of the world have done, the time has come to recognize that we are not alone in the universe.
Right, and one of the things that Nick mentioned with those 160 documents, even though most of them are just some man who looked up and saw a type of UFO, he said if you go through them very, very carefully, you will find radar confirmations of sightings, sightings by pilots, other very, very interesting things. But I think what was most interesting is that it really followed the French, and he said that if it wasn't for the French releasing their documents, that the British probably would not have released theirs. So it tends to be this kind of snowball effect. And I know one of the reasons from my own investigation that the French had released their documents is that they have this department, it's kind of like NASA or government, called GAPAN. And the person who was running that in the past actually broke some of the information prior to the government release, and he did so because there was so many sightings of UFOs in France over certain types of military installations. Has this happened also in the United States?
Well, we do have declassified reports in 1975-76 stating, in effect, and here I paraphrase, that all major U.S. military and nuclear missile sites were visited by low-flying elusive objects all the way from Maine to Montana. And this is quite shocking to see the scope and the activity of these, shall we say, alien technologies. I also know from my research in Brazil with Brazilian authorities that in May of 1986, a low-flying elusive objects were able to enter the areas of Sol Jazeiro dos Campos in Sao Paulo, that is to say, the southernmost part of the great country of Brazil, and move over an unknown nuclear facility that was being built unbeknownst to the Brazilian public. When this came out, there was a cry of outrage, and this was important because not even the North Americans had on their military maps any knowledge of this secret nuclear facility, and so it was quite interesting that the, so we say, foreign powers, all planetary powers, are interested in what we do with our technology. Are we taking a slow slide towards self-destruction? Did we show in 1945 with the first atomic bomb being tested that we had lost control of the planet to some form of military science that was pushing us towards an end of biospheric collapse? Are we in a situation of recognizing the hazards of going into outer space with no planetary ethic that would prevent space wars? So all of these questions come out, really, of the dialogue behind the scenes that astronaut Mitchell was addressing, and one can understand why the governments throughout the world have shown a certain conservative approach to this very sensitive subject, and obviously not having the complete picture, they would be logically in a good situation of waiting for more information.
Right. Going back to the dialogue between the host, Nick McGarrison, and astronaut Mitchell, the host asked, what do you think the intent of the aliens is? Is it hostile or peaceful? And it's interesting that Mitchell, who himself claims not to have actually seen an alien, but just be in the circles and committees that have been in direct dialogue or with some of the government agencies that have the information, he says, not at all. They're not hostile. It's pretty obvious that if they were hostile, we have been gone by now. So it's interesting he's saying that even though they might be going over military installations or things like that, that he doesn't see them as actually being hostile. And then, of course, Nick asked him, what do they look like? And he said, well, you've seen some of those pictures. The pictures that I know of, some of them are these little people that look strange to us. As far as I know from my professional contacts, that they have had contact with, those pictures are pretty accurate. So what do you feel about the aliens that are really inside these craft, Dr. Hertak?
Well, I feel that we're looking at a new textbook in biology. I've examined at least 70 categories, 70, of life forms, all the way from robotic intelligence to life forms that have been drawn by shamans in Africa and sociologists in Brazil, suggesting we have beautiful life forms, and on the other hand, we have grotesque life forms. And I'm here to remind our audience throughout the world that if we look very carefully at all of the great anthropological / theological traditions of the East, West, North, and South, they all speak of a dialectic between the lower and the higher powers of the universe, that we simply cannot be naive to rush headlong into greeting those who have a superior technology as our saviors. I think that would be an improper psychology. And I'm also here to remind our audience that that the late General MacArthur told us that the next war would come from outer space. So astronaut Mitchell's opinions are very, very positive and generous on one side of the spectrum, and those of the great hero of World War II, General MacArthur, on the other side. So we need to have other astronauts step forward, and I've been privileged to know Gordon Cooper, and I would highly recommend his book, Leap of Faith, and also a book that we worked on together called The Doomsday Conspiracy that was authored by the famous American novelist Sidney Sheldon, which details in a science fiction fashion an American naval officer who in the region of Thun, Switzerland, that's by Interlaken, had dialogue with a intelligent life form from another world and was given information that resulted in the death of many scientists involved with the whole dialectic of electronic warfare.
So would you say certain events, such as maybe the abductions phenomena, might be from certain levels of intelligence, usually those of those little gray people, very similar, I have to say, to those of Roswell. There's other people who have seen very interesting other forms of intelligence, such as those that are called the reptilian. And then some see intelligence just that look very much like us.
Well, this is the whole science. Again, I don't want to say this too critically. I welcome astronaut Mitchell's statement. I lectured with him. I know many of the colleagues, and having worked on many issues with remote sensing technology, with airborne, spaceborne systems of information retrieval, I would simply say this, that we really need to come up with a new textbook of biology and recognize that there are other life forms that will give clues as to how we are in the process of seeing a much larger aspect of evolution, called in my book, Book of Knowledge, Keys of Enoch, the higher evolution, that we are not the end product of the evolutionary process, but just one side issue of a vast complex of what the ancient prophets called the Tree of Life, with many galactic branches and streams of intelligence.
Now, getting a little bit closer home, I know on August 1st of this, just a little few days ago, 2008, NASA released information that there was clearly water and ice found on Mars. And there was some release about a computer system called MECA, which has to do with microanalysis, that showed that maybe the potassium and all the other elements for life that were present near the water were perhaps indicated that water and life might be something that comes together.
So right. You're referring to the MECA wet chemistry instrument that was part of the probe and that was connected with Jet Propulsion Lab scientists here in the Los Angeles area. That stands for microscopy, electron chemistry, conductivity analysis, and all of that seems to have been playing out towards a recognition that Mars did have a climate supportive of life as we define it here on Mother Earth. I know Peter Smith of the University of Arizona was incensed and felt that the reports were preliminary in their findings and call for conditions of life. In essence, they were misleading and bogus. I think as we really work with the finding of water fossils near the polar areas of Mars, as we begin to probe more deeply into the subsurface of Mars, we will recognize that exobiologists are right in suggesting that small microbial intelligence may have come from the ejecta of the Martian surface millions of years ago and may have indeed started some type of triggering mechanism of evolutionary life on our planet. In fact, I do believe that the two planets were much closer in one time of interplanetary evolution and share the same biosphere. So it's not too far-fetched for Paul Davies and other exobiologists to suggest there are still intriguing mysteries on Mars, and I believe that all of the great cultures, from the Zulu to the Chinese to the Hispanic, refer to Mars as a planet of war for a very specific reason.
But it is interesting what you were saying that they said is not real is a document by Craig Kovart from Aviation Week, and Aviation Week's usually a very credible magazine, but he seemed to have been outscooped, whichever you want to say. He said that the White House has been alerted by NASA about plans to make an announcement soon on major new Phoenix lander discoveries. The Phoenix Liner was the most recent one, concerning the potential for life on Mars. And it, basically, it does come from the fact that they have the chemistry there, and with all that chemistry, why not life? So, of course, the water release is not really that new. They've been releasing the fact that Mars has had water for many, many years.
Well, look, back in 1989, the Soviet Phobos 2 mission, when going into orbital insertion around Mars, had its cameras on. It was part of a deep space effort also with our colleagues at Jet Propulsion Lab in Houston. And I've seen the documentation, as shocking as it is, showed that the Russian probe was followed by an unidentified object some 26 kilometers in length, overtaken and then neutralized. We have documentation of the pictures. This has been the subject of controversy behind the scenes, and privately, when I was in Russia lecturing before members of the Academy of Science, I did talk to several other officials who were the equivalent of NASA officialdom in this country, who said that they believed indeed there was some type of extrasolar probe that was in the Martian system that was responsible for the loss of that mission as well as several others. So again, looking at this more deeply, we have to draw in the contributions of other planetary scientists and specialists from other parts of the world who definitely believe, like most great cultures and traditions, and again going back to the theme of Mars, that Mars somehow has a greater role in the mythology and in the culture history of Mother Earth for reasons we have yet to probe.
Well, so you agree in a sense that the whole concept of life becoming from a type of panspermia, that means maybe comets or even other levels of intelligence, seeding life in the universe is a clear possibility. Is that correct?
Yes, but it's not limited to Mars nor this Mother Earth, whether it's to say that we have a whole spectrum of other possibilities, and if we become too focused in our own discipline and overlook the big picture, then we tend to write off the contributions of other scientists, cultural historians, social philosophers, and others who believe that there is more to the story than just simply finding through the wet chemistry lab some little signs of microbiological life that is 1 centimeter or less in size.
And that takes me to the May 2008 release by the Vatican, which is very interesting and, of course, made headlines throughout Italy, that the Vatican's chief astronomer says there is no conflict between believing in God and in the possibility of extraterrestrial brothers, perhaps more evolved than humans. And this is the opinion of the Reverend Jose Gabriel Funes, a 45-year-old Jesuit priest who is head of the Vatican Observatory. He said, in his opinion, this possibility of life on other planets exists, and he sees no problem with that conflict. And he even went on to say that, you know, some of these realms might not need any kind of help. They might be in close oneness with God. In other cases, he feels that maybe Jesus Christ is there to help, or other levels of intelligence. So it's very interesting that he said this. He also added, just as there is a multiplicity of creatures on Earth, there can be other beings, even intelligent, created by God. This is not in contrast with our faith, because we can't put limits on God's creative freedom. So what do you say about someone from the Catholic Church? Are they finally waking up to this reality? And is between our government with the Mars probe, is this perhaps a real final release of information? Is this all building to a great crescendo?
I think if you look at the Sistine Chapel, you look at all the great art forms of early Christianity and medieval Christianity, you will see various scenarios depicting angelic life forms from other worlds. Clearly, this statement by the Argentinian astronomer is consistent with mystical Christianity, and for that matter, the great mystical tradition of the Judeo-Christian scriptures, even accepted by Sufi scholars and other traditions, such as the great Sutra text of India that speak of other life systems that at one time had the ability to bring knowledge forth to the peoples of planet Earth. I do want to emphasize, you know, my work with the Book of Knowledge, Keys of Enoch, as you know, it presents a new consciousness cosmology of a much larger picture that we must acquaint ourselves with if we are going to really understand why we are being visited at this time and why all of this information has to be understood during the critical phase of development. In other words, our evolutionary history suggests we only move forward by quantum jumps when we are put under great pressure of systematic crises, plural. And the keys of Enoch tell us the keys to the sons of light, we would call these the ultra-terrestrial life forms we're now seeing in the STS-75 documentations and others from declassified sources, are given in the transmissions of living energy codes within the people of God. They are sent from living universe to living universe to reveal the codes of light, that is to say, superluminal light, to the orders of evolving species within cellular time, so that the coded nuclei membranes may attach with the light or the larger membrane of universes.
So you're saying that there's a universal energy throughout the universe, and that energy creates life, creates different creatures, creates different energy forms, forces, and that there's really this whole intelligent design almost behind life. Is that what you're saying, Dr. Hertak?
I'm saying that there are many electromagnetic spectrums, many universes, plural, a multiverse is a reality, and we are multidimensional beings who are being visited not simply by extraterrestrials but also other life forms. And the larger significance of this is to find the spiritual dimension that ties all of this together.
Right. We have some questions now, and so I'm going to pick up the phone from Trudy in California. Trudy, what's your question?
Dr. Hertak, how are the extraterrestrials going to affect our world?
One, they will bring into a sense of psychological and sociological awareness that we are going to realize we have cosmic cousins. We have cosmic kindred throughout the universe. We share immense resources in high levels of future science, and in that sense of recognizing that we're not alone in a vast system of billions upon billions of galaxies, we're going to develop, as it were, the awareness of a whole new type of humankind, which I will call spacekind, with no set limits.
So we're really opening up our consciousness to realize that we have, as this man from the Vatican said, brothers and sisters in space.
Or as St. Francis said, when he looked at the animals, they are our brothers and sisters.
But how do we figure this all out if there are positive and negative intelligence? How do we make the differences between what intelligences are we just going to welcome them all, or is there some sort
of... Well, that's why we have the Academy for Future Science, which brings together specialists who are sociologists, biologists, musicologists, astronomers, people from other cultures who have been working on this question for well over 35 years and who recognize a common language that unites us. And it's a language that is highly musical on one hand and highly symbolic on the other. It ties together the basic components of what the ancient mystics referred to as higher consciousness or the epiphanal experience, the epiphany that raises us to recognize that we are doomed to perfection, that our evolution is connected with other life forms, which the Christ figure referred to as the Father's house and many mansions.
But how are we to relate to extraterrestrials that might come and really try to abduct us, come through our windows at night? What should we do with these intelligences? Are they going to be our brothers, or are they the same?
Well, you're asking a larger question, and again, this is why we have on our website, futurescience.org, and other websites such as thekeysofenoch.org, a plethora of music tapes and CDs that people can go to and use for what I consider to be a type of musical upliftment, a type of psychological preparation of discerning the different vibratory levels. Those that come in the sense of brotherly and sisterly love will vibrate on a certain level. We will recognize these life forms not simply through their physical form, but rather through the harmony or harmonic of the heartbeat, the vibratory essence of their higher state of creativity, and the compassion they show or may not show towards other life forms. In essence, the Christhood or the Buddhahood element that is so important, our science here in the West has become too object-oriented rather than human-oriented. It's the human compassionate side that must come out of these close encounters or these trade-offs that we have with other cultures from other solar systems and other parts of the greater universe.
Well, it sounds very complex to me, but I often say that it's just like people on this planet. You go out into the streets of New York or Los Angeles, and you're encountering, you know, thousands of people, and you have to pick and choose. You have to see who has the right vibration, who do you feel the fellowship from. And I think we have a question from Jeff. It sounds very interesting, so and similar to this. Here's Jeff on the phone.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Hi, Jeff and Danny Bursey in Corona Del Mar, California. Dr. Hertak, Keith Vianoch described diverse types of visitors, extraterrestrials and ultra-terrestrials. Why do they come here? What are their interests here?
Well, their interests are to remind us that we are part of a much greater cosmic family, and also to emphasize that we, at some point in our evolutionary process, must take charge of our future and recognize that our future doesn't stop with Mother Earth. Indeed, the Keys of Enoch tell us that we are living in a fantastic universe teeming with life, and there are certain biophysical and astrophysical elements within our body that, if used properly, can awaken our body to be a living vessel or biotransducer of music, of sound, of creativity, and we can pull from the universe this great information to refashion life, just like Mozart and Bach and many of the great musical masters who, in their quintessence of their life, brought forth great spiritual music in the depth and the love of the divine mind. And so they're coming here, I believe, as a type of sociological outreach to remind us that we are not alone and that we are part of a much larger picture of what the great apostle called Adamic sons and daughters.
But I think we have to get real, because some of these, as I remember our old friend Virgil Armstrong, some know him as Posty, said, they need us, we don't need them. So he was looking at, I think, a different level of intelligence, talking about those that perhaps were kind of using our genetic DNA. I think there's also the theory that they themselves have been cloned so much that ultimately they don't have the DNA or they don't have the emotional differences that we have, and so they come here to try to, you know, make use of who we are. Now, that's one level.
If I can inject a comment here, I think you're moving too fast. We can't use a big paintbrush to speak of they and simply see these as the little three-dimensional life forms. There are life forms that are multidimensional that exist really in a state of consciousness beyond physical evolution. And so we have to look at the greater track record and introduce ourselves to the larger question of why the scriptures, the ancient Hebrew scriptures, begin with the whole lesson of image and similitude, recognizing that there is an image of God imprinted throughout greater creation, and there's a similitude of energy fields that allow other life forms to share some common dimension of creativity with the human race.
Well, maybe this makes a relationship between some levels of intelligence that seem to appear and look like us would have more of that image similitude that you're talking about than other forms of intelligence that really are kind of grotesque to us, perhaps. Those are the ones that maybe don't always have our best interests at heart. So this is something to think about. But I know another term that you often use is the term ultra-terrestrial, which is different from extraterrestrial. And so the ultra-terrestrial are really those higher levels of intelligence, those more divine levels, I think, that are also perhaps manifesting. I know people oftentimes see lights in the room, and all of a sudden out of the light comes this being of light, and they don't know who these intelligences are. Can you tell us more about them?
Well, the term ultra-terrestrial would relate to those non-physical forms of advanced intelligence, just as the ET, the extraterrestrial, is more advanced than the human by virtue of higher technology and mobility to work in a wide variety of planetary environments. So also, the UT is advanced beyond the ET in terms of having these angelic-like or god-like powers, very similar to the avatars of the traditions of the East and the archangelic traditions of the spiritual forms of higher intelligence in the Western traditions of antiquity. The ultra-terrestrials do form a whole different level of teaching and wisdom and, shall we say, traditional teaching of the Kabbalah or the science of the living universe does give us some insights into the other levels of creation. For example, when we work with the ultra-terrestrials, we realize that the ordinary reality we perceive is not one physical universe. It's the harmony phases and movements of an indefinite number of universes, which include spiritual planets or life systems that are far in advance of the ET hypothesis.
Well, let's take a few more questions. I have Ben from Arizona. Ben, what's your question?
Thank you, Dr. Hertak. You mentioned ultra-terrestrials, and this is the time of the year that crop circles seem to be appearing in England and all over the world. Is there a connection between extraterrestrials and ultra-terrestrials and the crop circles?
Well, investigations that have been made by Colin Andrews, whom I personally know, suggesting that the authorship of the cross circle phenomena has not been resolved. British intelligence, MI5, has been looking at this. The late Gerald Hawkins, who I knew personally as the great mathematician and one who used an IBM computer to decode Stonehenge as one of the first great astrophysical computers, told me privately he felt that these crop circles were made by off-planetary intelligence. We know that in the Keys of Enoch, which I published in 1973, in Key 215, I mentioned Stonehenge as a place where round numbers would be found and that these round numbers would key us into a whole new type of astronomy. And lo and behold, in the early 80s, the British observers noted around Stonehenge these unusual circles called agrograms or crop forms or circles, sacred geometries. Why we have upwards of 70% of the crop circle phenomena around Stonehenge remains to be seen, but the Keys of Enoch clearly tell us that these crop circles are part of a whole new language system that we're being entrained by. We are using as stepping stones to a universal language which will link the megalithic sites of the world and the crop circle phenomena of the fields throughout the world to the harvest of the human race. In other words, the symbolism is one of a harvest taking place, that the human evolution is going into a whole new reconsideration of its evolutionary track. And in the greater context, these symbolic forms imprinted on the fields also are imprinted on our consciousness domain of learning a whole new language of upward ascension or evolutionary contact we have with not only the ETs but also the UTs.
Well, that's going to be exciting for, especially for our next week's show when Alan returns from the crop circles in the area.
The Keys of Enoch were the first to mention what we now call crop circles, and we had a confirmation when I was there in June showing one crop circle phenomena having three inner sub-circles, spelling out the functions mathematically of pi or through concentric geometry and radial geometry, exactly a formula that is found in the Book of Knowledge, Keys of Enoch.
Right. This is the Barbary Castle crop circle that appeared June 1st, 2008. And I know we were standing in that. That was really exciting because it has different zigzag edges. And when you cut it like a pie, you get exactly the number of 3.141. And then I think the next thing is 5. And it goes all the way on to dot, dot, dot. And what Dr. Jack's referring to is the dot, dot, dot made three smaller circles within the circle at the very end. So you can find this on the Internet. It's really a fantastic crop circle. And there's some new ones now coming out where it looks like sparrows coming together or doves. So no one knows, of course, if they're sparrows or doves, and some other very interesting geometries that have appeared this year. But I guess the real question is, of course, some of these are made by man. And as many people have said, oh, here's a crop circle, and then they claim they've made it. But I think some of these, I know last year on 7/7/2007, which would have been July 7th, 2007, that some people were out in the field taking a night viewing vision of a certain area, and all of a sudden about 3 o'clock at night there was this flash of light that you couldn't see any crop circle or anything before that, a flash of light, and then about 10 minutes later, 20 minutes later, this perfect crop circle appeared. So it showed that, you know, some of this has to be some sort of microwaves, radio waves, magnetic fields that are affecting. It's not all people out there making the crop circle. So I think that's important for the viewers to realize that there is these other levels of intelligence or other ways of manufacturing than some guy sitting there with a board. Certainly one can do that, but in this case on 7/7/2007, I think it proved that they're not all made by man.
Well, clearly some of these forms suggest platforms that could be using military technology to use microwave imprinting on certain preselected sites. But having looked very carefully behind the scenes with some of the top British researchers, it is clear that these events of the more elaborate crop circles that would be upwards of 60 to 90 to 100 different geometric forms could not be simply imprinted within a fraction of just a few minutes unless we're working with super technology from some other airborne source, i.e. ET source, or as Gerald Hawkins said, other life forms from other parts of the universe.
Now, there are people who think it's the military, because as you said, there's the military bases all over Stonehenge in that area, and it's a very large base. So perhaps, you know, there's something that they know that we don't know, and maybe some of the technology. And this has been the idea also of some of the reason why some of the flyovers of nuclear sites, maybe it is military technology. But if it isn't military technology, if it is extraterrestrial, because even the military would have probably gotten their knowledge from perhaps the Roswell crash.
Right. Well, there could be what we would call psychotronic technology that has been employed. But let me say this. We do know that this is just one small part of a much larger phase that would happen, for example, at military sites like Bentwaters, where we had not only the sighting of the vehicles, but the manifestation and demanifestation of what some would call paraphysical life forms. And so it is not simply the writing of ABCs in the field. What is being written in the human consciousness now is that we're going into a major scientific quantum leap. We are seeing confessions being made by leading astronomers, cosmologists, astronauts of the importance of recognizing that there are other scientific civilizations looking at Mother Earth, looking at what we're doing with Mother Earth, and requiring us to come forth with a great responsibility of recognizing common values, to reach for a biological ethic, a planetary ethic, a whole new space program that can, as it were, help us understand that we as space kind will take our place with the family of nations and the greater cosmos. These are the greater important questions that we want our audience to understand, and this is why we have the Keys of Enoch is one important blueprint that brings about the understanding of musicology and art and science working in hand with these great breakthroughs.
Right. You mentioned Bentwaters. I think this is an important, while we're talking about extraterrestrial sightings. This was in the UK in the 1980s. It's a joint Royal Air Force base as well as U.S. military base that's shared on somewhere on the east side of England, and people, I think, for 2 to 3 nights almost saw this unusual phenomena, and Lawrence Warren, who we personally met, actually stated how aliens actually appeared, three aliens appeared in almost in beams of light in front of him, and when I asked him personally, were they holograms, he said no, he thought that there was really a presence there, that they were actually their own bodies, even though they were almost see-through. So Laura Lee is on the phone, and she has an interesting question. If all this is taking place, she wants to know about some aspects of, I think it's Laura Lee, colonization.
Thank you, Dr. Hertek. My question is, will the ETs, will they be colonizing here on Earth, or do you know if they will be colonizing here on Earth with us? And if so, those who would do this, are they positive, or are they for us, or would they take from us?
Well, this is a very good question. I can simply say that having worked in more than 20 countries and looking at some of the case studies, we have those that would complete the medical homework with human beings. In other words, would not recognize our free will and would take advantage of our precious body fluids and materials for certain experiments. Certain researchers like David Jacobs and Bud Hopkins and others would look very critically at these intruders or those who would simply look at it as a game reserve they could selectively choose from. Others who are looking at the larger picture would state that, yes, there are those types, but the majority are very positive and that we would gain an information index that would be very, very critical for our future development, and that if anything, the human race has been updated by certain happenings from other systems. We look at the great nativistic tradition of the indigenous people in North and South America who speak of the star people, who speak of those who bring great knowledge and great wisdom at the end of a cycle, a period of time.
But people, of course, have reported that the government has had aliens in captivity, maybe gotten some of the information for their technology from there. But also, there is the possibility, I think you can't deny it, that if so many civilizations exist, they might be actually walking in our midst. So that's a very interesting concept, too. I know there have been reports of people who have claimed that they have encountered aliens, even in such places like restaurants, and seen different skin and different eyes when someone takes off their glasses. So I think we all have to be aware that perhaps we're getting closer and closer. And I think this does tie into your book, where we talk about that there's a real space-time overlap taking place, where the energy fields are opening, and perhaps the fact of the quarantine that we've been in to allow ourselves as a species to grow and to develop is now coming to an end. This is what seems to be happening right now with all these different sightings taking place.
Well, this theme has been discussed by Dr. Stanton Friedman with others on the Larry King program in the summer of 2008. Clearly, the keys of Enoch tell us that because of certain other experiments that took place, what we call the human race, and because of the bellicose, the aggressive nature of the human intelligence, we have been watched very, very carefully, and in essence, we have quarantined ourselves by our negative thought forms, and this is why higher knowledge is necessary, really, to bootstrap a whole new understanding of, really, the whole dynamic of why we have a great philosophical, spiritual heritage coming together behind, as it were, the approach of ultra-terrestrial life forms, suggesting that we are sons and daughters of the Most High, and that as we go through this final test, not to bow down to the lower gods, the ET gods, we will discover in our higher nature that we are indeed superior in many ways in taking, as it were, the next stage of cosmic schoolhouse Mother Earth into a university setting.
But things are definitely getting closer and closer. I know there's been flotillas of vehicles not only seen by astronaut Gordon Cooper in the 1950s over Germany, but flotillas of vehicles seen by people in Guadalajara, and more recently flotillas of vehicles seen in Lima, Peru, 2007. So we have Carol on the line, and she has a question about, because people do get afraid of this stuff when it starts really hitting home, and maybe NASA comes out and says that life might exist on Mars, and people are concerned. So Carol has an important question, I believe.
Hello, Dr. Hertak. This is Carol from Julian. What prayers and divine names would be most effective to use for protection and help for our planet and the population?
A very important question. In my work with training people in many areas of aviation, airline pilots and people involved in commerce, people involved in governments in South America and Africa, there's been the use of the sacred expression, which we find in the Old and New Testament, holy, 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 and I use it in the ancient Hebrew Aramaic, kadosh, 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 Adonai Tzabaoth. And if we say this and use this with great joy and with great understanding, it sets around our body a type of vibratory landscape, and those life forms that can favorably respond to the sound signal are those that will work with us openly, recognizing the same Godhead of the great prophets and apostles. Those that draw back with a robotic-like stare or with the absence of any sense of human compassion ethics are obviously those life forms that we must disengage with very, very quickly. But we have the importance of learning a whole new language, or what I will call psycholinguistic text. And the Academy of Future Science is coming out with a book called The 72 Names of God, which is to show the historical use of certain phrases or certain affirmations. And to that end, with the sacred geometries and the explanations of these historic text and linguistic utterances, I think many of you in the world audience will be best prepared to deal with the mental, physical, and the paraphysical handshake.
Right, and I know that the Academy of Future Science has many CDs of music also on their website, and it's all connected with the Keys of Enoch, which is your major book. And so we encourage audiences, if they're interested, to go to the keysofenoch.org website and see some of this music that is part of the sacred language that is used for prayers and protections, as our associate here asked recently. The other thing to say is that the Academy for Future Science has study groups throughout the world, so people who really want to know more about this can actually tune into the website and find out about study groups, perhaps, who want to learn more about extraterrestrials and ultra-terrestrials. So maybe some final closing remarks here. Dr. Hertak.
Well, we are told in the Book of Knowledge, Keys of Enoch, God's plan has no end. There's life in the house of many mansions. I believe we have reached that point where we are seeing many confirmations of the Keys of Enoch come to pass. The finding of another branch of the human race in the island of Flores, in the Indonesian island group in 2003-2004, the so-called Homo Florensis, is an important confirmation. It's exactly along the grid lines mentioned in the Keys.
So this being, this Homo Florensis, this is not a human that's found on the planet, but it's actually another group.
A proto-human that would exist there approximately 800,000 years ago.
So if we have different Homo types of intelligences here, it doesn't make any difference that we would also have other intelligences in space. It just makes sense.
Correct. Also, the Keys of Enoch mentioned certain sounds that we would recognize as coming from certain constellations like Perseus. We would have certain sound patterns that would identify those that would be favorably disposed towards the human race. We have leaked knowledge from the Chandra X-ray lab in England in 2003, sounds coming from Perseus 57 octaves below Middle Sea. And so there's a direct confirmation of this code book that I published in 1973 taking place, namely in terms of the language of music, the language of paleontology, archaeology, the language of sacred geometry and crop circles, the language of recognizing the different levels of universal intelligence, ET, UT, and extra-celestial intelligence. We have basically the exposition of the teachings of the Tree of Life, with all of the branches of knowledge that require an understanding of the human-divine partnership, what some would call the man-god partnership, the woman-god partnership. We must recognize that in all of this, the human being is the gift, is the object of the great evolutionary experiment on Mother Earth, and we have these God-given abilities now to recognize beyond all of these mathematical paradigms and all of the discussion by the astronauts and cosmonauts, that we have to find ourselves also in inner space. We have to find our divine blueprint written in our heart. We have to find the divine names of God written in our inner soul if we're going to understand this great change to be a positive transformation of all things.
So we're also finding something else out when we start looking into these areas, and that's perhaps that we are not limited to planet Earth, that our whole code system of who we are is not limited to planet
Earth.
Exactly.
We are non-local, multidimensional beings growing up in a vast and awesome universe, realizing that Schoolhouse Earth is coming to a close. The doors are being opened to a vast system of creation, and we're going into the greater university of the universe as cosmic citizens.
And who do you think, and when do you think this will all come about?
I think it's coming about now as we talk, as the vibrations of this program go forth, as our wonderful music, also connected with the late Alice Coltrane, Gilberto Gil, the great singer from Brazil, Carlos Santana, the great musician from North America, echo in so many different forms the whole transformational process. People will realize this is the generation of the quickening, the generation that understands positively above and beyond all of these lower experiments that we have a home beyond the powers and principalities, and that is life in the house of many mansions.
And so, as we close this idea, let us think of ourselves as no longer earthbound. Let us see ourselves as really beings that can travel throughout the stars. Let us see ourselves as connected with beings of brothers and sisters of light in the heavens, but those who respect us, those who look forward to joining, having us join with them, I should say, in oneness with the universe. And so, as we do this, let us see ourselves really as not only in outer space, but let's see ourselves in journeying through inner space and having interconnections, because it works in both ways. Many of these intelligences are not just physical, right, Dr. Hertak? They're actually
exactly. Multidimensional.
But
in the names of God, we have the biological blueprint of our DNA, RNA, And in the language of God's sacred names, he's given to all great prophets, seers, mystics, and poet scholars, we have an invitation to learn the language that will quicken us in the realization that we are part of a living family of creation that has no end, and we will graduate from humankind into spacekind, and we will discover the life form that is behind all that is the sign and the symbol of the divine being awakened within us.
So on behalf of Dr. Hertek, I'd like to invite everyone to visit his website at keysofenoch.org or futurescience.org to find out about the books, the philosophy, and the CDs and study groups that the Academy for Future Science has throughout the country. And with that, we will close. I invite everyone to stay tuned next week when Alan Steinfeld returns from his journey to the UK and find out more about crop circles and what's going on in the universe. Thank you very much. New Reality signing off.